Hey guys, if you'll bear with me for a sec, I want to try to do something very dramatically in a cool fashion. Beneath the streets of London, there is another London. A somewhere that is neverwhere. Yeah, that turned out okay. Great. Benedict Cumberbatch and James McAvoy lead a stellar cast in a BBC radio adaptation of Neil Gaiman's best-selling novel, Neverwhere. You can start listening to it right now with a one-month free trial to Stitcher Premium. Go to stitcherpremium.com/BBC and use promo code CRACKED at checkout to get your free month. You'll also hear the original Flight of the Conchords show. You'll hear the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series from the BBC. If you know me, you know these are all of my favorite things, so I'm going to buy up all the subscriptions. If possible, you'd better beat me to it by going to stitcherpremium.com/BBC and using promo code CRACKED. Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name is Alex Schmidt, and I'm the head of podcasting here at Cracked. I am also known as Schmitty the Clam, and I am also here to tell you it's Christmas in August, baby! Merry Augustmas. Augustus, or whatever. Here's the point. We are launching a new podcast. New podcast, guys. This show is called Cracked Gets Personal, and season one of Cracked Gets Personal premieres this Wednesday. That's August 16th. It's coming out. I don't know if you read the articles on cracked.com. Hey, try it. But for years now, we've run articles in our personal experience section where we do journalism. We interview actual people about their actual lives. We're going to link off to a bunch of examples in the footnotes, if you're not aware. But it's an amazing section of the website. It's led to us, the comedy website crack.com, covering national elections from the campaign trail, embedding reporters everywhere from Iraq to the Ukraine, and revealing incredible lives of seemingly ordinary people to millions of readers. So that's what that is, personal experiences. Cracked Gets Personal is the podcast version. It's like one of our personal experience articles if it was also a good, you know, audio documentary and a great comedy show all rolled into one. I could just keep describing it, but it's a little easier to let you hear it. So let me play you a short sample of episode one of Crack Gets Personal. It's an episode about the world of emergency medicine. Everything from patients with light bulbs up their buttholes to alligator poachers trying to play off gator bites like they're fishing accidents. You know, like a bass did it or something. Anyway, there's this clip we're going to play you right now, where it's hosts Robert Evans and Brandon Johnson exploring the world of doctors passing up their own services.
So, Brandon, before we get to the alligators, I wanted to talk about how working in emergency medicine fundamentally changes your conception of death. So here's Dr. Daniel to talk again about death.
Basically, for me, there is no way I would ever want to die in the hospital. You know, I want to die at home watching bad TV, wearing my jammies. And the reason is doctors see that there are things that are worse than death. Internal medicine doctors are somewhat condescendingly called fleas. And the reason is because fleas are the last people to leave a dead body. So one of the things that happens is, you know, families bring grandma, 97-year-old grandma, in, and they just keep bringing her in. At some point, you say, you know what, just keep her home. Don't bring her in for any circumstance. One of my mentors, a great neurosurgeon and kind of nationally known, he started to forget things. And this is a brilliant person. And he got lost driving to work. And he said, you know, he was worried that he was going to have Alzheimer's disease. So he went down and he coerced his friend to do a CAT scan on himself. And he got that and unfortunately showed an inoperable brain tumor. So this is a guy who spent his whole life operating on brain tumors, and he could look at his CAT scan and know exactly what was going to happen to him and could say, okay, this is what's going to happen with aggressive surgery and treatment and radiation. And he just said, look, I want none of that. I'm just going to go home and live what time I have. It's interesting to me. I've had a couple kids with severe head injuries, and if the parents have any kind of medical knowledge, they just want everything stopped. If the parents don't, they want everything there to the bitter end. And if you end up with a nursing home patient, so be it. So there's a different perspective of seeing this is what it looks like a year down the road and 2 years down the road. And there's a real difference between the physicians and other people.
I feel like I just learned that the Oompa Loompas were slaves and that they didn't have enough money to afford the chocolate that they make. It's crazy to hear somebody be like, No, man. I mean, I serve this McDonald's, but I wouldn't eat this shit if I were you. It's crazy.
Well, that's what you go into, like, surveys of oncologists, cancer doctors, and it's like they overwhelmingly say, like, no, I don't want chemo. Like, unless it's like a sure thing, like one of those, like, oh, yeah, you get a little skin cancer, we can pop that shit, like, right away. But, like, if it's, yeah, we need, it's going to take an aggressive course of chemotherapy, as often as not, or more often than not, they're like, no, I'm just going to, like, I know what that looks like. I don't want that for me.
Which means basically that the medical community is more about comfort than it is about preserving. And that's kind of justice.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's also, like, I think, just acknowledging that, like, well, usually it doesn't work. Like,
right.
Usually, like, it's not like with this guy with his inoperable brain tumor. It's like looking at that and knowing, like, I've seen tumors like this. I know what the odds of the chemotherapy and surgery being worth it, and I know what the odds are that it just makes my last couple of months suck.
Right.
So I'm just going to enjoy them.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Doctors do not use their own doctoring.
Not
and if they do,
they
use it in a way that's like, you're going to die to themselves in a mirror. And they're okay with it. I think that's what you got to do, I guess, to keep going, because you see so much death that eventually it does just become, oh, you want fries with that?
Okay, so that was about 3 minutes of Cracked Gets Personal. And in those 3 minutes, I laughed, I gained wisdom, I grew as a human being, and I will never see a doctor the same way again. That is a powerful 3 minutes, I think. Maybe you think so too. And that's why we're so excited to bring you hours of this show, Crack Gets Personal. It is so worth a listen. Also, I hope you noticed the dynamic on the show. It's Cracked's own Robert Evans, the head of our personal experiences team, walking us through interview subjects, telling their stories. Then Robert and his co-host Brandon Johnson check in with each other about the bonkers tale we just experienced, you know, like you and I would as pals. Also, if you don't know Brandon Johnson, well, first of all, you do probably know Brandon Johnson. He's everywhere. He's in Adult Swim's show Rick and Morty, Pixar's Monsters University, HBO and the Duplass Brothers show Animals. If you like good comedy, you know his work. And I think he and Robert are phenomenal together on the show, and you're going to hear why. Also, making a show like Crack Gets Personal is an experience in and of itself. They tape with everybody from military fixers in Iraq to ordinary garbage men on your street. I mean, maybe not your street, but, you know, somebody's street. And as they made the show, we kept realizing that the making of the show could be a show, you know, if that makes sense. And on today's episode of the Cracked Podcast, we do that. We make that show of the show. I'm going to sit down with Robert and Brandon to look at the experience of asking a world of people the kinds of questions nobody else asks them. There's a lot of borderline insane revelations that come out in this one. We also get a little personal with each other on this one, which, I think is neat. So please sit back or keep up the workout you're doing. You've got this next hill / push-up / unit of kite surfing. I don't know how you measure that sport. Anyway. Point is, whatever you're up to, please also enjoy this talk with Robert Evans and Brandon Johnson. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. I am joined in the studio by Robert Evans.
Hey, hey.
Yeah, hey. That's a good number of heys. And I'm joined also by Brandon Johnson.
Somebody call security.
No. Yeah. To bring in a cake or balloons, because it's your first time on the Cracked Podcast, and welcome to the show.
So excited to be here.
Yeah, and thank you guys both for coming on as the hosts of Cracked Gets Personal. Comes out Wednesday. It's also a show that has been coming for a while, so it's been really nice for me because I've kind of gotten to experience it partly from the outside. I just discovered it was happening at one point when I started doing more podcasting, and I was like, oh, there's this incredible interview show with Mr. Goldenfold and many other roles in Brandon and Robert, who interviews so many people. It was just very exciting to me. It was great.
Goldenfold's, it's all about math. The whole podcast. And there will be a pop quiz tomorrow.
I would listen to his show. I'm just considering
that
for the first time.
I would listen to him just interviewing people.
You know, he's based on a teacher that I had who is no bueno, who was just an evil math teacher. So when they came to me and they were like, we want you to be a math teacher, I was like, I have just the person to pay back.
It's good you had that ready to go. That's great. Mm-hmm. I talked about the show a little bit in the intro to this, but could you guys describe your experience of making Crack Gets Personal? Like what brought you two together? I know it was the overall process of
Robert and his personal experience articles kicking it off. But how'd you guys get together?
Brandon auditioned. And so the big weakness of the personal experience thing from my point of view is that I'm not good at doing really funny voices. And so once Brandon kicked in, like,
hey,
it all took off.
Hey, your voice is very funny.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
It's pretty smooth. It's pretty smooth, too. He was like, I might talk about this burn victim. Do you have a type 5?
Yeah. That's really the key, is like, you can't spend hours talking to people about like the serious, horrible things that have, or weird things, or like the actual details of their jobs that have happened without losing like some of the, you, there's a degree of objectivity you need to make something really, really funny.
Yeah.
And so when you make that kind of personal connection with them, I lose some of that. Like I'm not trying to be like humble or anything like that. Like you just have to lose some ability to laugh at something in order to understand something and get good details out of people. So you need somebody who both has enough humanity, like Brandon has, I would say 90% humanity, like a lot of humanity.
How much do I have, Robert?
30.
All right, well, I walked into that. Like that.
I mean, you got glasses. That takes a lot of it right off the top.
Oh, yeah, I'm basically a cyborg right now. Yeah.
No, so the process that the PE articles have always gone through, the articles that we do that are sort of journalism-y in nature, is I or someone else interview one or more people and then write an article based on it. And then we send it to an editor to punch it up, because we again recognize that early on that it's easier to find the humor in this sort of stuff if you're not super connected to it. And as the interviewer, you're going to get connected to it. Like, there's always some jokes that occur to you, but you want another set of eyes on it. And so when we thought about doing a podcast, we knew we needed, you know, another set of eyes, somebody who can on the fly find what's beautiful and weird and funny about what we're talking about and maybe look at it in a different way than I'm approaching it from. So Brandon's been perfect for that.
That's great. That's very nice of you to say. I didn't do the investigative part, so I had to at least prove some of my worth. And Robert was like really cool about setting me up for these moments. He got great info. He really did get to know these people.
A lot of the episodes have come out of the process of researching personal experience articles for the site, right? Like, that's how
a lot of these are based on premises that were big hits for us. A couple of them are not, but most of them are based on, you know, we've already talked to other people who had. We generally reached out to new sources for these.
Great.
Just because we didn't want to be entirely repeating previous articles that we'd done. But yeah, like we've learned a few things about readers on the internet and what they're interested in over the last 4 years. One of them is that people are always want to hear what doctors have to say, as long as what they have to say isn't about how to stay healthy. They love hearing doctors talk about, I pulled this thing out of a guy and it was terrible. Yeah, I saw this other dude, you know, tried this crazy scheme to get me to give him painkillers. Like, we love that stuff. We don't want to hear doctors being like, move around an hour a day. Like, nobody wants to hear that from a doctor. Right. But we want to hear him be like, yeah, boy, don't solder a dildo to an iron bar and then jam it upside you. Like, that's not going to end well. I've seen what happens there.
That'd be the funniest, like, anti-comedy episode if the doctor one was just them with basic tips.
Yeah.
Like, right. Oh, stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Put that down. Yeah. Put it down.
Don't drink so much juice. It's just candy.
Right.
Not everybody knows. It's a 10-episode first season, and one of the episodes is about a thing that I didn't even know was a phenomenon until you guys covered it, which is that cops are shooting dogs.
Half of all firearm discharges by police are at dogs.
That's so many layers down in trying to figure out what's going on with guns in the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, first you need to understand that there's too many of them. Then they're being fired irresponsibly. Then they're being fired at particular kinds of people. And then like 10 levels below that in the elevator. Oh yeah, dogs are specifically the victims of law enforcement.
Well, you know, black people actually released that research because we wanted to get white people to care more about police shootings. So we were like, oh man, you do know they shoot dogs too. People were like, what? It's so inhumane.
Now we demand action.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then I was quick to point out, some of these dogs had criminal records, man.
Yeah, he was just immediately looking into the dog's social media profile, seeing what they were posting about on Facebook.
Right.
His dog was into MMA. That's no good.
Not the picture of the dog graduating, but the picture of the dog going through. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The dog licking its own butt. The dog biting a cat, you know. I was like, we don't know everything about these. I'm afraid of dogs. I think we're all afraid of dogs. Some of this is justified.
Having heard the show and our listeners haven't gotten to yet, you will Wednesday. I feel like there's a lot of episodes that are about these really hardcore topics, and you guys find funny things to say about them by having empathy for them. You guys are great together, and then you have different amounts of closeness to the subject, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think humor only comes with a degree of empathy, like, unless you're just shitting on people, which is, like, I mean, Andrew Dice Clay has made a good career of that, but...
Now he's a fine actor. He's doing it up.
Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't
get
down on the
for everybody, man. Baby.
That's there you go.
Everybody.
That is one of the great things, though, is that if you didn't have a closeness to the subject, there were some cool moments because Robert would look at me and be like, I understand that you actually live in that world a little bit. So we were able to present it to people, I think, in a way where they're like, damn, that's the question I want to ask as well. Or... That's incredibly ironic that that situation occurs amidst all the other situations around it. Like, I was downtown this weekend, and I noticed how close Skid Row is to the brand new downtown, the most beautiful, big money downtown that you can see in the United States.
Yeah, in LA, it's directly next to it.
And it was crazy because I was just like, this is the saddest situation in the world. It is literally Les Mis, where very poor people are being partied on top of by very rich people, and the distance between the two zones is really half a block, right?
Yeah.
So what we tried to do is sort of go, if we put you in the center of that and you were seeing the people having a good time and the people suffering, what is the most middle of the road conversation that would get you to listen? And if we had just talked about the people who were sad, people wouldn't listen. And nor do we want to just talk about people who are bawling, you know?
Right, right.
So I feel like we sort of achieved dinner table conversation with a little bit of, like, drama.
Yeah. There's a few categories of people you talk to, but there's also a lot of episodes with people where it's just surprisingly interesting folks. Like, garbage men know everything about everyone all of the time.
Well, yeah, and it's all a matter of, again, like, perspective. Brandon's able to bring a lot of interesting stuff to all of these because he has some distance and he has, like, he's looking at it from an angle that I'm not. He's looking at it from an angle that, like, you know, the interviewer's not able to get. And from the same token, like someone like a garbage person looks at the problem of like all of the shit that we throw out, all of the trash that exists in this world from a totally different angle from everyone else. Because not only are they seeing the quantity, which is the least interesting part about the amount of trash we generate, they're looking at what it is that we're throwing out. Like they're seeing, you know, you can't hide. One of the things that's pointed out is like the most accurate way to tell how much a society drinks is to look at their garbage, because people will always lie about how much they drink. Underreport by like 60%, something like that. That's what's interesting to me about a lot of these people is because of just where they're standing in society. You know, it's the same thing we did an article on human trafficking on, like people who have been basically the modern sort of slave trade almost.
Yeah.
One of the women we talked to has a really interesting insight into where our clothing comes from, because it's impossible to guarantee, unless you buy from a thrift store, it's impossible to guarantee that your clothing, there's not human trafficking at some point in the line. Like Patagonia just had a big scandal over it, and they go to ridiculous lengths to ensure that their stuff is ethical, but
I'm going
to
go change my clothes real quick. I will be right back. No, I'm just kidding. That's amazing.
That was crazy because
because
Patagonia went through all that, and it was the actual sourcing of the fabric. It wasn't the assembly. And that's the chain of command, is usually you're worried about the fact that somebody might be sewing together a jacket with 1,000 other people in a warehouse. But it was actually the fabric itself and the production of the fabric that they had missed out on.
Robert, I don't know how well people listening to this necessarily know about the personal experience articles in general, but how much interviewing goes into one of these episodes, especially compared to like an article on the site?
Good Lord. Because the articles kind of run the gamut. Some of them have been 30 or 40 hours worth of interviews. Some of them are one. Most of them are 1 to 3. I would say these podcasts probably on average 6 to 10 hours of interviews per podcast, 6 to 10 hours in terms of talking to people, emailing with people, trying to track down sources, convincing people to talk to us. You're asking an additional thing for somebody to put their voice out there, especially when they're talking about, like, we have people talking about being sexually assaulted while they were in the military and whatnot.
Right.
People talking about having their dogs killed, people talking about being the victims of attacks, being the victims of, you know, sexual exploitation.
The first transgender.
Yeah. Some of the very first openly transgender people, like, in Western civilization, like, the first people in the, like back during, like, the 60s and 70s who were, like, coming out and being open about what they were, who had it exposed against their will in some cases. So these are very personal stories, and it's hard to get I would say there's a significant amount of time that went into just convincing people that we weren't going to be flippant with their stories, even though, like, you want to present this stuff with humor, because nobody wants to just hear a bunch of sad stories on their morning commute. And also, like, that's not helpful. Like, even when you're talking about something sad, like human trafficking, you want to try to share with them something about human nature, something that gives them a cause for hope. You need to be talking about
resilience.
Resilience. Yeah. The fact that the people we're talking to are separate enough from this that they're able to look at it with a sense of humor now. Like, that's important, too. Like, making these people seem like humans and not just three quotes in a New York Times article about something sad that happened.
If I can say, everybody sounds very good on mic that gets interviewed. Like, not to the point where they're actors or something, but, like, they sound like they're very comfortable on there. And I feel like a lot of these people are people who are being interviewed for the first time in their lives. Like, maybe they've had a job interview or something where, you know, it's along the lines. But what do you do to get people so either easygoing on mic or comfortable or just willing to be?
Some of it's just you talk to them for a while. Yeah. Some of it's you try to ease them in ahead of time. You get a sense of somebody before you talk to them, like when you're still trying to reach out to them, who's going to be a good source or not. That's just something that comes from, like, having done this a while, is you try to pick people who you, like, know from the early stage of the interview. Like, oh, this person immediately brought up a thing as soon as we started talking. That means that once I actually get into the interview, they're probably going to have something good, like something useful to say. And some of it's just like, yeah, you try to establish kind of a human rapport with people.
I like, as a listener, you guys are often getting surprised by the people you're talking to. Even you, Robert, who have talked to them already. Like, I was listening to the Garbage Man episode, and there's a part early on where this British garbage man is like, oh, we found a shredded up sex doll at one point. Just they went over it with knives. And you stop the show and we're like, I didn't plan for us to stop here, but what? what's going on? Why?
And I acted like, what? What's the big deal?
Yeah.
It's what we all do. Isn't it what we all do when we're done with our sex doll? That's the crazy thing, is that there were a couple cases where the subjects that Robert was interviewing, instead of them being amateurish, they were actually super brave. Like, one of the things that the transgender and the women in the military, those subjects in particular, don't make you sad because of the way that these women spoke. You got the feeling that they were super strong. Yeah. So there's a lot of, like, dark, but there's also this incredible amount of uplifting, because the subjects themselves aren't going to present themselves in a negative way. They sound like survivors.
That's really cool. Brandon, I assume in the process of taping it, was it a thing where, like, you'd sit down and Robert would say, here is my box of interview things, and then it's just all hitting you all at once? Because it sounds like, I love how many of them you're just bowled over by right away.
It was really important going into this that Brandon not know anything about these specific people we were talking to. Like, I mean, I'm
thought
sure
you were
Brandon
just gonna be
was
like,
aware
not
of
know
garbage
anything,
men.
Yeah. Period.
No, we kept garbage men from him for decades. This is a very long process.
Who are these people stealing that stuff that I don't even want? And then Robert was like, those are garbage people. And I was like, you mean hipsters?
Yeah,
and he was like, no, not IPA garbage people.
Yeah, we had introduced him to the concept of dogs that morning, which took some time. Yeah.
Right. The nickname of the show is Black Dude Reacts. Because I would come into work and they'd be like, today we're going to do this. And I'm like, I don't have jokes. I don't have any jokes about that. As a matter of fact, that's a trigger. Trigger.
I'm so glad we have you on this show, because, like, you're one of the most trained people, I feel like, in comedy or podcasting or the world of this, because you also, people probably know you as a frequent guest and comptroller on Harmontown.
That's right.
And Harmontown, which is a great show, and a show that is one of a kind and raw, and things will come at you.
It is crazy to be locked in the mind of Dan Harmon, which is... we were lucky enough to get Robert on the show. It's one of our best shows, I think.
It's great.
Because we actually got an expert to answer some of the musings and ramblings of Dan Harmon. We got somebody who was like, I've been all over the world, and these things are true, and these things are not true. And he brought guests, so it was great. Robert killed it.
It was awesome. I was in the castle for it.
What?
I also
Black Dude Reacts. I don't want to won't have to pay any copyright on that.
We need a musical stinger or something in it, some kind of... It was one of the first shows, because you guys are in Starburns Castle now, and like Robert said, hey, yeah, you'll be on the guest list for the castle, don't worry. And I was like, ha, 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 I'll be at the comedy theater or whatever it's at now. I know they're not a Nerd Melt anymore, but no, it's a castle. It has like crenellations on the top and seems defensible.
Yeah, no, they have actually a lot of hot oil in there.
My favorite was Minion Alley, which is where they prepare the minions so they can actually be castrated and then work for Dan. It is the same sort of beast where you find yourself being like, oh, my goodness, let's talk about this. Even though every bone in your body is like, we're not supposed to talk about this in public. And can I get in trouble for making jokes about this? And what's about to happen? Robert was kinder because there were other people in the room, so to say. And like we had people to bounce off of. But Harmontown can sometimes be its own crazy thing. So I was glad to bring him into the fold.
Yeah. Oh, it was very enjoyable. Well, and yeah, you guys had like canned whiskey from Iraq.
Yep.
That was canned distributed to the Iraqi whiskey. Yeah.
Yeah. Just distributed to the crowd. That was very exciting. Yeah. Like, that's interactive.
People learned a lot of stuff.
Everyone learned the same thing, I think, about canned Iraqi whiskey, which is it's best observed and not consumed.
Canned Iraqi whiskey sounds like something you do to someone. Time to give them an old canned Iraqi whiskey.
Like a Colombian necktie.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like it's code word for something, but you know it's just no good, no matter what it is.
It's some way of executing dissidents. Yeah.
Yeah. Our whole audience either went over to Urban Dictionary or like Google News when you said that term. I mean, like, it's got to be something.
Yeah.
Also, it's one of the last things you say to your doctor right before he flushes out your kidneys.
That is the only drink that I've ever felt immediately in my kidneys. Like, it's not the next day thing. Yeah. It's you take that first sip of canned Iraqi whiskey and it's like, right there.
Yeah, it's like boxing.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of foods that you'll eat where you're like, oh, that hit me wrong. And you're like, already? Really? Yeah. Like, yeah, already, man.
I'm glad we got to Iraq because like, parts of the show involve interview subjects who are either have experience in Iraq and in war zones, or I think some of these people, did you actually talk to them?
They all live in Iraq.
There?
Yeah. These are my friends from Iraq. They work as, a college job over there since the Civil War started is like taking journalists to the war zone. Like if you're a young kid and you speak good English, that's the best way to make money. Because you can make like $1,000 a day during like the heights of the offensive, just like taking the New York Times up to go get shot at. And the only qualification for the job is that you speak English. So some of them are really good at this, and some of them are just kids. Like when we were, the last time I was up there, about a quarter mile away from us, and actually these guys were good at the job, two French journalists and a fixer were killed in an explosion. Like it just happened, like literally about a quarter mile down the road from us. We heard a boom, and then a second later we got the call-in that these guys had been hit by an IED. So it's a crazy dangerous job. The Iraqi army, it's not like any other army to where there's like you go through official channels, like you just know people. So if these kids are charismatic and they meet enough people with rank and stuff, then they can get anywhere. You can go absolutely anywhere you want to go if you're with one of these guys who's friends with enough people up there. And so it's just a matter of like finding someone really charismatic and hoping they're not full of shit. Yeah, it's a weird gig.
I haven't gotten to hear that episode yet, but I feel like that and others I have heard are very inspirational in their way. Either it's someone with what I thought was an ordinary job and it turns out, oh, lots of emergency medicine people are removing items from rectums at a terrifying rate.
Every one of them.
You know, and like they're rolling with it and they're doing great and awesome. And like also people have had horrible things happen to them, the ways they bounce back and the ways they come from it, like... I've been listening to a lot of podcasts about straight up the news or other terrifying things, and I feel like more inspiring podcasts would be a good thing in all our lives.
Yeah, this one's great because, like I said, you will hear a side, I think, of people who survived what they went through, and it's super inspirational. It's not tragic, and usually they get covered tragic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in these situations, we've got people who are like, this is how you make it back from something like this. This is the way to stay clean or to stay happy, and that's really interesting.
Yeah, I would think. Were there ever questions you ran into? You know, when you're at the precipice of asking something and then in life often it's like, no, ma'am, I can't. No, we can't bring that up. Like, were there ever any sections of these interviews where you were like, I am super anxious about getting into this topic with this person?
There were a couple that were just a little bit agonizing in that regard. One of them was the human trafficking podcast talking about like at some point you have to get into the question of like, okay, so at what point, like this was a lady who was being sexually trafficked. It's not like a Taken situation where she was being like, you know, held in a brothel by a bunch of ambiguously French men. It's more of an emotional sort of like being emotionally trapped. This is somebody that you think you're in a relationship with, that you feel like you owe things, that you're keeping secrets for, but you're not, like, he's not keeping you locked up. Like, you're going out, you're turning tricks, you're taking the money back to him because, you know, that's why this guy, this particular person in question was a man in his 50s who had gotten I think she was 15 when she started dating him. And then he gradually got her into turning tricks. And then when she was 18, working in pornography and handing over the money to him. And so it's the emotional abuse of a teenage girl who doesn't have a cohesive family unit back home. And so is more vulnerable to being emotionally manipulated by somebody in that situation, by an older man. Asking questions about that, about why you would want to work for somebody, about why you'd want to service somebody like this, about why you wouldn't go to the police. Like, it's hard to ask, why didn't you go to the police? Because you don't want to be like, you're the victim. It's not your responsibility to do anything about the fact that you're being victimized. Like, it's not your job to stop someone from victimizing you. It's their job to not be a fucking monster.
Yeah, and as a questioner, you don't want to be like, hey, dummy, come on.
Don't you know there's cops? Like, yeah. you do need to ask that question. You need to ask, because that's important if we're going to understand, because this woman we're talking to is, you know, years on the other side of this. She's doing okay now. She's got a good perspective on it. She's living a life. You need to be able to ask why you got so stuck in this, how you got so stuck in this. Yeah. What about this person compelled you to not reach out for help? Because that's the only way to understand how these relationships work and how to protect other people who might be in the same situation. So that one was tough. And then we have a whole podcast built around a question that I don't ask people normally who might know the answer, which is like, what's it like to kill somebody and how does that affect you?
That is also one I have not heard, but I know it's on the list of things.
Yeah.
And great.
Yeah. And now, we'll keep that one a little bit quiet at the moment because that's got some weird stuff in it. The whole question is one that I specifically don't ask. Like, I interview a lot of cops, a lot of soldiers. You talk to a lot of people who have, you know, they've killed somebody because it's like this guy was, you know, special forces and did 7 tours in Afghanistan or whatever. Like, I'm sure he shot some people.
I didn't even know you could do 7.
Yeah.
So don't they cut you off at some point? Aren't they
not
like...
if you're special forces.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, that's kind of why people get
don't
into
they
that
cut
job.
You off.
I guess, right.
Get out of here.
Too much
man.
War for you.
Get out of here, man.
You're too good at killing.
Right.
I think I just sounded like a very young child at an amusement park. Like, I thought you only get X amount on Superman. What?
Why'd they fire Daddy? Daddy was too good at killing.
Too good at killing. Weren't going to be enough people left over there for all the other. Okay.
It's like golden time where it's just like, we can't afford you, man. You've been with us for 7 tours. You're up to like $1 million a hit now.
Nope. Once you break 40 people a week, you know, that's, then they got to start paying for your health care. You can't be a contractor anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, you're a senator. I just immediately handed you the Senate.
He leveled up. Like, you know, the other senator leaving, like, man. Well.
Straight from the Army to Senate.
Who would you guys like to talk to that has either.
I mean, Bill Murray.
Oh, Bill Murray. Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose that I kept that very general, didn't I? Oh, just who would be good to meet?
The great thing about Bill Murray is we could ask him all the questions that we asked last season. What's it like to kill somebody?
Yeah. Tell me about human trafficking, Bill.
Right. Exactly.
Right. When you morphed into a dog. Right.
And, as a garbage person.
Yeah.
What have you seen?
Is garbage person the standard terminology for, because it, in my head, I keep reading that as an insult.
I've never called them garbage person because that does sound like an insult.
They're
garbage
sanitation.
Man, garbage woman. No one's. I've never met anyone who called themselves a sanitation engineer.
Yeah.
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 Sanitation engineer.
Sanitation engineer. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
It makes me want to be one. That's a fantastic name.
Right.
Yeah, it sounds like you're like designing a cleaner society rather than picking up everyone's used condoms and.
It sounds like you're like arranging drain pipes with one of those Minority Report boards where it's all touchscreen with gloves. It sounds
also like that
so great.
If you picked up his white coat and his clipboard, there'd be shit on it. Like, yeah. What do you expect? I'm a sanitation engineer. Mm-hmm. I come to work, I immediately step in shit. I'm cleaning vomit off me. I don't even know where that comes from.
And he hints hits on an important point there. They are all from New York, every single one of them.
Yeah, it's like we're both from Iowa. No, we learn this accent when we stop.
The only way to pick up trash.
Once one guy started picking up trash, we all said, "Fan out." There's a lot of used stuff out there. The great thing is they could hurt us. This is an army of people who could honestly hurt us. They could blackmail us.
Yeah,
they could sell information. They could do so much stuff. And the truth of the matter is, when you die, they are sad because they passed by your house. So those are the sort of things that you'll hear is like, oh, man, I didn't know this about this. But we're one line away from a profession that could screw us over. And yet, man, do they care about us. And that's what I learned. I was like, man, your garbage dude actually has a crush on you sometimes, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he gives a shit. He's paying attention to your life. Like, they get worried about people. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll be like, oh, he's not vegetarian anymore. You know, they just find meat in your thing or something.
Suddenly he's drinking a lot more. Right. I wonder, and, you know, now there's a bunch of, like, women's clothing in the trash. Oh, boy, I wonder what happened there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys keep finding more and more just everybody has things to talk about.
Yep.
Like, it's not quite a direct example, but a few weeks back, Donald Trump Jr. was being talked to by Sean Hannity, and it was clearly for political purposes and so on. But to, like, get out of their obviously political interview at the very end of it, Sean Hannity was like, you know, we're not done yet, but I've run out of things to ask you. I've run out of things to ask you. In my head, I was like, beyond all the politics of this, like, no, that's the son of the president. Like, I didn't want to know so many things about his life.
Let's
dive deep.
As much as I care about the politics, there's like a totally non-political interview that you could do with any of his kids just about what it's like when the Secret Service is a daily reality of your life. That's got to change some stuff, right? You can't suddenly have government bodyguards everywhere with you and not alter some aspects of your life. Like, what about Tiffany? Like, I'm sure she's never going to have the chance to smoke a little bit of pot. Like, just to break a little bitty law as like a teenager.
And you know what's worse? They're going to let Barron. They're going to let him try it.
God bless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her,
God
no.
God bless.
Him, sure.
I would want to do something. I think there's people that we don't hear from. So I definitely want to hear people who live on the underground economy. Like, I'd love to interview somebody who worked in the black market stock market, which is like some of your pimping is up, some of your drugs are up, some of your money laundering's up. And that industry, that world in and of itself, has things that go up and down, just like the regular stock market. So I'd love to hear like how a mother of three who's unemployed manages to sell food stamps for cash, turn that cash into, you know, a used TV, stolen TV, and then flip that TV into parts for the car. And then, because I know that there are people out there that are on these underground economies that don't have the internet, so it's not dark web. But I know that these people who are functioning in these underground economies that I would love to talk to. Because there's this thing called queso fresco, which is white cheese in Los Angeles. Probably everywhere you go, it's white cheese. But you get it on things, and there is no store that sells it. So we know that there are industries where this product, there is no factory for it.
I never thought about
that. It's coming out of somebody's house, and it is bigger than Nike, you know.
Bigger than what?
Nike.
Oh, yeah.
You just called it Nike, and we all just stopped for a second.
I say it Japanese. I say the Japanese pronunciation. I don't know if you guys are familiar.
Miss Nike?
You guys miss Nike? Nike.
I feel like everybody has one of those things in their life that, like, is a thing they say differently from everybody else, or just a word they've never read that everybody else is like,
yeah.
Wait, did you just call it Walmart?
When we're taping this, the previous episode, I called it Coachella. And exactly, that happened.
Let's beat this motherfucker's ass.
Coachella.
The internet with my rose Coachella up as blanket. One, and it was like, listen, I did the detective work on it, and I learned the way I was doing it from Bugs Bunny. He says it that way in the episode with the bullfighter. And so that's hilarious. Why I have been calling
it that.
There's
an episode where
life.
Bugs Bunny goes to Coachella?
He pops up in the bullfighting ring, and he's like, here I am, the Coachella Valley Carrot Festival. And then it's not that, but...
It's a new one.
He said Coachella. No, the old one.
The old one? That's crazy.
Yeah, I think before it was a music place, it was
his Carrot Festival. It's still a city. Like, it's a place people live all the
no,
time.
No, bro, it's a music festival. It's a music festival,
fucking
bro.
Barely that.
Yeah. Well, when you told people that, people stopped. They were like...
Man, I'm glad I didn't have like notifications on my phone for social media because it would have like melted. Out of all the guests you've had, is there anybody that you would want to talk to again? you probably did bring them back if you super wanted to get them again. But I feel like at least a few of these episodes, like the opioid people alone, I was like, oh, I want to find out everything about this.
Yeah, that's always interesting. I want to keep checking up on the sources about their addiction. We did articles on people with methamphetamine addictions, and most of the sources for that have since relapsed, which is not uncommon with you know, any kind of drug addiction.
Why are you guys looking at me? Whatever. Every day's a struggle.
Adderall doesn't count. There's a guy we talked to for the Killing People podcast who, this is not what he does now. He doesn't kill people now, but his job now is, he's a doctor whose specialty is bioweapons. So he's in Siberia right now because they're having a horrific anthrax outbreak that's caused by the melting of a lot of the snow, that there's just anthrax, a lot of anthrax in Siberia for some reason. It's like naturally occurring. It's just like being freed up because the stuff's melting. And so he keeps going up to Siberia because they're like, there's a shitload of anthrax and they don't really know what to do about that yet. Like, that's just one of those things. We're all going to have to deal with a shitload more weird stuff melting.
It almost feels like Siberia was like, how many more reasons can we find to drive people away? Like, how many... What can we do?
Siberia. We have train, anthrax, everything you need.
Are you tired of seeing Russians escape? Siberia.
Siberia. Where you go when you can't go anywhere else because government will kill you.
Man, Russian accents are so fun.
Oh, yeah. Right? I could do that.
Context aside, they're great.
Yeah, and just in 6 more months, it's just going to be an American accent, basically.
There you go.
Gotcha! Take that, political sphere!
I don't know. What if this whole Russia thing boils over in the 3 weeks between now and when the podcast airs?
You heard it here first, man. Just like the OJ verdict, Trump is not guilty. I'm like, still gonna riot.
We could be three presidents down the line in 3 weeks. There's no way to tell.
Yeah. Folks, I'm broadcasting to you from sunny Los Angeles, California. But we want to get out of here. It's gross. There's too much traffic. So the Cracked podcast is flying across the country to come to you live in New York City for the Now Hear This podcast festival. It's happening September 8th through 10th. Our show is on the 9th. Now Hear This brings your favorite podcasts to one place for an entire weekend of live shows. You can see Comedy Bang Bang, How Did This Get Made, Love It or Leave It, Criminal, Politically Reactive, Star Talk, Who Charted, The Nod, Black on the Air. It's basically every podcast you like under one roof, and one pass lets you see all of it. The festival is September 8th through 10th. Again, our show is on the 9th, and if you come to New York City and get one of those passes, it's going to be a great weekend. Go to nowhearthisfest.com to learn more and get tickets, and you can enter offer code CRACKED at checkout to save $20 on a full weekend pass. They also have single day ones, but the full weekend one, we can give a limited amount of people that opportunity to save a little bread on it with promo code CRACKED. And again, that's nowhearthisfest.com. We will see you in the Big Apple. You know, I haven't gotten permission to say this, but I'm going to call this the Summer of Earwolf. It's the 500th episode of Comedy Bang Bang. There's all kinds of news shows coming out from Cracked and from the overall network. And there's a new one coming up we want to tell you about. It's called Homophilia, and it's celebrities grilling other celebrities on what they're loving and who they're loving. I know I put that very confusingly, but we got amazing hosts. Dave Holmes, who you know from International Waters, his book Party of One. He's a former MTV VJ. Also, Matt McConkey, who's a writer on Bajillion Dollar Properties and the official film critic of the podcast Bitch Sesh. It's adapted from both of their work and also just their lives. And it's a look at people whose voices aren't always heard on podcasts these days. It's an excellent show. Their first guest is the one and only Cameron Esposito from Take My Wife, Comedy Bang Bang, and so much more of just comedy. You've heard Dave on Spontanea Nation and How Did This Get Made, and just all over your favorite Earwolf shows. Now they're all coming together to give a unique look at people who deserve it. New episodes come out on Fridays. You can subscribe to Homophilia in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And if you like the show, tell a friend, because then you'll have somebody to talk to about it. Thanks.
Was there anybody who you felt like almost overshared or anything? Because like I'm a person who instinctually will be in life will be like, oh, the person I'm with is oversharing quite a bit. Why don't I steer them back? Why don't I work them away from, you know, for both right. our sakes, mainly my sake. But was there anybody where you're talking to him and it was like, oh, I feel like this is just too much to be in as a conversationalist?
All of our doctors had a lot of stories about removing things from butts and vaginas. That podcast is full of butt and vagina things that shouldn't go in there. Like, obviously, there's a list of things that can go in a butt and are meant to go in a butt, ditto vaginas. These are things that are not meant to go in there, or things that are meant to go in there but being used inappropriately. I would certainly have probably steered the conversation away from that if we'd been eating at Chili's. But, you know, obviously...
What about another restaurant?
I mean, Outback Steakhouse, that's like a fair topic of conversation.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
pulling things out of assholes. That's like what you talk about when you get your wait for your bloomin' onion. Yeah. Talk about someone else's bloomin' onion.
Man, I led you there and you went with it and I appreciate it. That's on me and I appreciate it.
Oh, no. We promise our listeners every one of these podcasts has a bloomin' onion joke in it. And at some point, Brandon will say the word Krugerrand.
Krugerrand. Yeah. It's important, man. We don't know how far this podcast is going to go, man. It could go all the way up to the Rothschilds, who only use Krugerrands. Illuminati, awesome. Man.
If I could just say, when you were
That's
talking
who
about
I wish them. We could have on the show. It's I would love Illuminati. To talk to the Illuminati.
Would be an amazing episode. Yeah. I mean, we'd all be dead after, but it would be great.
Right.
Either that or it would be really sad. Like, I have to think if you could actually get someone who's a member of one of those secret societies that's supposed to control the world, they'd just be like, no, I mean, do you think it would be like this if anyone was in charge?
I'm always curious about, as far as you guys personally, like, how comfortable are you just getting to know people in life? Like, are you introverted? Are you extroverted? Are you cool with that?
I hide from people in a dark cave in my house and avoid them at all costs.
I'm pretty fascinated by people. Yeah. I've had a solid career in service. So, like, I was a food service dude, and I was, like, I sold clothes for a while. I was a salesman. So
yeah.
I'm pretty interested in people's background and what got them to be standing in front of me. Because sometimes that's a great place. Sometimes that's not such a great place. But I'm always interested in people's journeys.
Brandon, you act quite a bit. I feel like the very rare times I've acted, this sets will usually have a lot of just getting to know people going. Like, it's a lot of, when there are breaks or things being set up, a lot of, oh, let's all discover each other's stories.
It's crazy because you have all that downtime between moments, right? So people, they are really trying to bond as quickly as possible. But it's when you come home from work, you're always like, I'm really tired because I've said hi 120 times. Because each new person gets a hi. And you'd be walking to the bathroom and somebody would be like, hi, hi, hi. You know, because we all say hi to each other as we see each other when you make eye contact. Because it would be weird if out of 200, 300 people on a set,
oh yeah,
some dude was not in the consciousness of, hey, we're all sharing a space. We all need to say hello to each other. So it's crazy because you will wind up being more tired from interacting than you are from actually acting, which is also a Jesse Jackson poem. I'm more tired from acting than I am interacting. Also my book.
I just heard we're doing a series of interviews with people who do makeup artists for politicians. And one of the facts out of there is that Jimmy Carter's eyes are apparently things of unearthly beauty.
Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter has the most gorgeous eyes in the world, according to the people who have done his makeup. Yeah.
I would believe that about like every president.
As blue as the sky.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
If somebody told me, like, oh, 90% of presidents have cool eyes, I'd be like, that explains it.
Yeah, that would
that's how you get there.
Make sense.
Yeah. There haven't been any short ones.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Or at least since TV, right?
I mean,
or you can't do it.
Depends on how we're counting FDR.
Hey, man, too soon.
Madison. Yeah. And Madison.
Way too soon.
He was a small fella. That's what I'm going to say.
I want to say Garfield probably wasn't that big either because he was kind of a fatty.
Right.
And by fatty, I mean a person whose ideals didn't match the century, not his weight. You ain't getting me no angry letters.
All his descendants just turned off the show. They're very angry about that. Garfield's 6 foot.
Oh,
shit.
Not bad.
And couldn't have been more wrong.
Madison is 5'4", the shortest president.
5'4"?
Yeah. 5'4"? That's barely a man.
Talk about desperate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to, well, our resident president expert is Daniel O'Brien at the site, but one thing I do know about Madison is apparently Dolly Madison was like his entire charisma and getting to know people. Like his wife was all of the talking to people and being fun and being popular, and he just kind of rode those coattails and wrote constitutions, and that was it. Like that, he just worked and let her handle the whole side of being cool.
Somebody got to do that story. Because that's insane. Is she the one who did ice cream as well?
She's the one who like ran out of the White House with the paint, at least one painting when the British were going to burn it down.
Yeah. What's this about ice cream?
One of the first ladies is the first person to serve like ice cream. It's a big deal.
Oh shit!
I believe it was her. Yeah, she was on it. Well, that's Brandon. Where are you from? I don't know.
St. Louis.
Oh no way.
What about you?
I'm from outside Chicago.
Illinois, great though. People don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You can get the full run of the United States within one state because there's a little Chicago, a little Boston, a little New York. I mean, of course, there's Chicago, but there's a little New York, there's a little Boston, and then there's the Great Plains.
There's a pretty sweet ass museum in St. Louis, too. You get to crawl around, they serve liquor.
What museum is that?
Well, say what it is.
It's a big, giant, like 5-story adult jungle gym thing.
The St. Louis City Museum.
City Museum, yes. Yeah.
Because I was like, there's the beer factory there, and I was like, you're not supposed to crawl around. That's, like, that's a whole different experience. There's also
they got
the bowling.
Real angry.
There's also the bowling museum, and I was like, where are you crawling around?
No, the City Museum's fucking great.
Yeah.
When you said, like, that big landmark you climb on, I imagined you on the arch for a second, like working your way up.
Just drunk on the top of the arch.
With police helicopters trying to... Yeah, because the only museum I've been to in St. Louis, it was the joint International Bowling Hall of Fame and St. Louis Cardinals Team Hall of Fame. It was one building, and then in the lobby, you went one direction or the other direction, depending on whether you wanted all bowlers or Cardinals.
See, that feels simultaneously like it's got to be really uplifting for the bowlers, because bowling's not super popular anymore, and kind of a bummer for the Cardinals, because they're like, we're not a big enough sports team to get our own thing. Like, we share it with bowling.
Yeah.
But bowling's like coasting on them.
Bowling was there first. It used to be all bowling museum.
Oh,
no. So that's why I was like, no, it's the reverse. The bowlers are like, get those baseball players small balls. Get the small balls out of here.
Kids and your damn tiny ball sports.
Right. Only reason you got to use a bat on that thing is because it's not big enough to roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel bad for the Cardinals, sort of. And they're a huge team.
But it's baseball.
I know. He said, yawning. I feel the same way. St. Louis are the worst fans because, like, if they're not winning, you lose two games in St. Louis, and we're like, you know, there was a football team here once, and they're gone twice. They're in Arizona, and now they're back here, L.A. Rams. Good luck with that, L.A. It's going to be hilarious. Go ahead and build your stadium on in the poorest section of the city, uproot a bunch of black people, and then play football on their dead bodies. Good luck with that team, L.A. I don't know if you saw Poltergeist. This does not work out well for you.
I think like you just pitched a great horror movie, though. Poltergeist, but with a football stadium?
Right.
Yeah.
In general, as a sports fan, I knew like, stadium financing is kind of icky and so on. And then I learned from our site, somebody did a column about how Dodger Stadium came together, and they built that on top of a neighborhood that didn't want to move.
Right.
Using eminent domain, and like there's a former schoolhouse under the field, and like it's a whole
teachers still there.
Yeah, because when you go there, it's on this beautiful mountaintop, and you're like, this is such a great place. And like,
can't believe no one was here.
Some people lived there.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Generations of them. But back to the poltergeist idea, because you could have kids getting pulled into the Jumbotron. That was the central vision of that.
I love that, you know, when you live in Hollywood, you know that somebody's going to take that idea and they're going to be like, and then the ghost team from the people who lived, the only way to get rid of the ghosts is to beat the ghost team. But they big black dudes too, because it was Compton. So then you got to have like the LA Rams versus like Johnny Depp's ghost team.
Angels in the outfield too.
Right.
I feel like Johnny Depp is already attached to the script. And this is far as it's gotten.
He got to make that divorce money.
Oh, he's like a Remora.
His agent is on the phone right now. I want a piece of this ghost stadium movie. Ghost Ball? We'll keep working on the title.
Ghost
but it's going to be Ghost Ball.
What was the thing that made you get out of Illinois?
Yeah, I wanted to do comedy. And there's a lot of comedy in Chicago. Like, that's not a limiting factor. But I went to Syracuse for school, go Orange, and then and had a great experience there. And then it seemed like coming here was the next step.
Did you do comedy in New York?
I lived in New York in the past as well as L.A., like New York City. Okay. So I did comedy there and here.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I like that the plane looked like it was about to stop in Illinois, and you were like, no, let's roll all the way to California.
And this begins the hijacker episode. So, Crack It's Personal, featuring me,
D.B. Cooper. You could pass for D.B. Cooper.
There was a fan theory about Mad Men before it ended that it was going to turn out Don Draper was D.B. Cooper. Mm-hmm. If people don't know, D.B. Cooper was a very famous plane hijacker who all people know about him is, like, I think the police sketch is he's in sunglasses and he's a real squared
away,
cool-looking
like
guy.
He looks like Don Draper, like, in sunglasses.
And he's never been caught or found. And the fan theory was, oh, at the end of Mad Men, Don Draper will D.B. Cooper an airplane and he's D.B. Cooper. But that could almost be the theory for every show. Like, that's my new unified theory of shows, is that they're all about D.B. Cooper, because anyone could be.
God, that would make for a hell of an ALF finale.
Or the end of the Cosby Show.
Oof. Speaking of people who were sexually assaulted by celebrities, we did a PE article last year with Roman Polanski's, the woman who he raped when she was 13, because she's done a number of interviews, actually, and had some really... Yeah, she was a really interesting...
I should know that. I guess I missed it.
It was a great article. Like, at this point, obviously, it's not... She doesn't think it's cool what he did to her. It's, like, really messed up. But she's also very frustrated with the fact that, like, every time he's in the news for a movie, people reach out to her again. It's like, what do you think? Like, I don't want people to keep asking me about the thing that happened when I'm 13. I'm 50 now. Like, leave it be now.
Re-victimization.
Yeah.
Even if you were cool with it.
I don't know what I would have expected going into, like, hearing that woman's story. But, like, for her to just be like, I just want it to be done now. Like, there's nothing to be gained from continuing to go after him. Not that it's not fucked up what happened. Like, yeah, I'm angry about it. But, like, I've lived a life now, and it's frustrating that people keep... Every time he's in the news for any reason, people all reach out to me. What do you think about this movie he's had that's gotten nominated? I don't watch his movies.
Right. It is bananas that he gets that moniker and that people use him as an immigration argument. They use him as you keep hiring foreign workers. And whenever somebody else gets busted that's a celebrity for any sort of child rape or pornography, they're like, well, what about Roman Polanski? And it's crazy if you're the victim. You're like, man, get a different example. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to move on from this. And I think it's because he was the first that people really, really, really talked about since the 20s.
Right.
Yeah, even though all the famous people from the 20s, something. Like, either you're either Fatty Arbuckle or you're Charlie Chaplin. He probably had some darkness up in there. Mustache like that.
As he's primarily known, the Hitler guy.
Yeah. You play Hitler once.
And then who was that Chaplin-y dude who ran Germany for a while? That didn't go well either.
Angela Merkel is the name. Merkel. It's not a dude. You're very confused. it seems like being somebody like that in a Polanski story, it's almost like I read something a while back about Supreme Court test cases. And how a lot of times the people in those cases will be kind of sort of recruited by people who are trying to be activists for the cause they're working for. Mm-hmm. Like, we need some case to go through the Supreme Court to put this on the books. So we're going to look for people who we can help. You know, we'll take care of the lawyers. We'll coach you through it. Like, that's the way to go. Being a victim of that, it's almost like you unwillingly were the test case for, like, your name's as famous as Brown in Brown v. Board. But
yeah, or Roe.
You didn't ask for that at all.
Or was it Roe or was it Wade who was the woman?
I thought those were, like, aliases. I don't know if those are actually.
I think the woman who was the actual focus of the case later wound up being anti-abortion in life, which is, or later in life, like, decades later, because she only died pretty recently.
Roe is, it's a fake name.
It's a fake name. Yeah. A pseudonym.
But Wade is the lawyer from Texas.
I'll take geography for 500 now.
There we go.
Obviously, I control the board.
Yeah, it's got to suck to just be famous for, like, something that, like, that. I'm sure that none of those people wanted that to be, like, the focus of their life, that they were involved in this case or that they were assaulted by this person. But, like, it's like there's, you know, Ronald Goldman's never going to be famous for his waitering.
Right.
I assume he had other ambitions. Yeah, I hear Cato Kalin's a nice guy, and, like, he's going to be most famous for the O.J. Simpson thing now, even though he's had a whole career and, like,
they're people
decades, like, since then. Yeah.
And then I also feel like there's probably a positive flip side of that Polanski victim example where, like, I would imagine some of these people, it's nice to get interviewed about this stuff at all, or victimization or anything. It's either maybe cleansing, I would hope, to be talked to, or just exciting, or I don't know.
It's a hard call because you got to figure that they disconnect in order to present that history. They're doing their best to give it to you objectively, but they've had to tell their story a bunch of times usually because it's been involved with testimony. Or somebody close to them has asked, what happened to you? Where have you been? And I think when you're constantly searching for meaning, like a lot of us, you're looking for a way to present what's happened to you in a way that other people can understand. And that's really, really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because trauma takes words away from you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It makes you actually kind of quiet, you know? It makes you not really be able to talk about it because talking about it makes it real, you know? It's the opposite of the secret. You're not trying to self-actualize and put into the ether things that you don't want to see. You're actually trying to stuff those down. But I do think that there's a part of exposing yourself and that old you that is amazing. So people do, in certain situations, like to actually just get it off their chest because it's heavy. I always say memories are very heavy and they take a lot of room. So the average person tries to select which ones they want to drag behind them. And if somebody's done something to you, the last thing you want to do is keep their weight, you know.
Yeah, it's that baggage metaphor. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Apt.
Holy shit, yeah!
One thing we have happened in the wake of every article we've ever done with, like, the victim of a sexual assault of any kind. Like, we've done articles on what it's like to be a rape victim who tries to prosecute your rapist, what it's like to be a man who's raped by a woman, what it's like to get raped in the military, what it's like to be a man who is sexually assaulted. Like, all we've done a number of articles with victims of every kind of shade that we could find of sexual assault. And every time we run one of these, I get emails, sometimes dozens of them, from people who were victimized themselves, just saying, like, hey, I read this. I'm really glad that you posted this person's story. It made me feel, like, comforted because something similar happened to me. And then they'll just write out what happened to them. And they're like, they're not expecting it to go in an article. They just know that, I guess, I or whoever it is wrote the article talked to other people with that experience. So they just email to share their own.
That's amazing.
Just because they need to get it out. And they're like, oh, this is a person who, I guess, is ready to hear this sort of thing. And, yeah, I don't know what to do about that, but it's just something that happens every time.
And most people carry a script, because even if you go into therapy and they ask you about yourself, you will present them with a story, and they'll say, okay, so that's your story. You hear that a lot, mm-hmm. where people are like, okay, that's your story. Now let's change that story. Let's change your perspective on that story. So I think a lot of people that you ask personal questions, if they've been through some sort of trauma, they have their story already out, and it's in a way that they are able to present it. It's sort of our job is to go, what's this part of the story that nobody knows? What's this part of the story that hurts you the most? The thing that you don't want to access?
Yeah.
Because that's when people are most honest, is when you're talking to them about the thing that they are really, really afraid of and trying to get away from, mm-hmm. you know?
But, and also hopefully on some level trying to get to, because they've showed up, they're here to talk, you know? Like it's a weird mental balance or holding two thoughts at the same time.
Yeah, it's hard to work on yourself. So I think when somebody else is in the room and they're like, give me this thing, that's something that you may not have presented, but they're with you in the room. So they're like, this is the truth, you know? I used to sell clothes, and clothing is a hard thing to sell because people hate themselves.
Oh, gosh.
And
they
never hate themselves more than they do when they're forced to dress themselves in a new way, which is what every clothing store is. So even though America has this great shopaholic relationship with malls and clothing stores, the truth is once they get inside them, they're really trying to get right back out. And you see people at their most raw when they're forced to deal with the fact that this is what their body looks like.
Oh, man. Well, and in that lighting, too, in the changing room.
Yeah.
Never good.
Listen, that's all on your side. And that's the crazy part is, like, everything has been engineered so that you feel good about yourself. But nobody can do anything about the way you actually feel about yourself. That's internal. So even if I presented you with a ton of options, you'd still be like, I walk with me, though. That's the biggest problem. I went to Australia, and a friend of mine was like, what was Australia like? And I was like, it was great, man. I was there by myself, and I met myself. You know,
when
you have a lot of time in the room by yourself, the hotel room or in another country, you meet yourself, and hard situations force you to meet yourself. So when somebody asks you, who'd you see? And you're talking about yourself, it's easier if they're being honest. They tend not to be honest until they're like, man, at 8 o'clock, this is who I saw. You know what I mean? And it was dark.
All the jobs where people have gained some sort of perspective on their fellow man are jobs where they meet them outside of their comfort zone. Like, I'm going to guess pizza delivery people probably don't notice a whole lot about people other than that they like pizza. Because, like, you're in your happy place when you're delivering pizza.
Except when that door swings and those kids are still fighting and it's not about food. Or when you push the money at the dude and he's like, man, your life is so busy, you don't have time to even be kind to me. And you can see his wife back to you. You're like, within a very small amount of time, you've picked up an immense amount of information.
So there you go. I guess it's
like that Hemingway short story, but with a pizza transaction. Just like, oh, I know these six words about him, and that's it.
I think we're getting with Brandon talking about, because I bet we could talk to like a dozen different people who have worked, or 100 different people who have worked, you know, selling clothes in one way or another, and they wouldn't be able to get that inside out, even if they had the same insight, even if they'd seen pieces of that. And that's part of what the hardest thing to do as an interviewer, or when you're finding subjects, is to find people who have perspective, who have thought about what it is that they do. Because I'm going to guess, we talked to some garbage men who had good perspective. I'm going to guess there's a lot of other garbage men who may have had the same realizations as our sources did, but never verbalized them, never thought about them.
Yeah.
If we could find a way to formalize that, to like figure out which people are able to do that, then yeah, you could get great articles out of people who have, you know, worked at Ralph's. But I wouldn't just start talking to random people who work at Ralph's, because I wouldn't expect most of them know what to say at this point. That's a tough thing. I'm sure it's the case with most people who have the more extreme experiences, with most doctors. The ones who are willing to talk are the ones who realize that they have something to say. Because at some point, they all have the choice. Like, we're not putting a gun to anybody's head and saying, tell us about the time you were assaulted, you know, while you were in boot camp or whatever. Or tell us about what it was like being trafficked. Or tell us about what it was like being a garbage man. These are all people who somebody reaches out to and says, I'm interested in what you do. Do you have anything interesting to say? And they know they do. Like, even if they don't know exactly what it is, they know that they've had enough of those revelatory moments where you're handing someone a pair of jeans and you see the shame in their face as they, like, look at themselves in a mirror that you know has been aligned to make them look good. That's the whole another dimension to it that I don't know how to, like, formalize in any way, but that's what you're always looking for as an interviewer. It's not just people who have had interesting jobs, because I've talked to people with some really cool jobs who had nothing to say.
Yeah.
You could press them on it all day long. And I've talked to, like, some of the worst interviews I've done are people who were, like, Navy SEALs, where it was like, I know you've seen insane things, but either you're not willing to talk about it, or you're like, well, it's like, it looks like what you think. It sounds like what you think. Like, it's like, okay, well, that's not what I want to. I want to know, like, what you think having this. I want to know it's changed you.
Come on, we're all SEALs, right? We all get it.
We've all blown up a fuel depot. Like, let's.
And how did that make you feel? Bad.
Yeah. Hot.
It was, like, not good, but it was.
It was really bright and loud.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't a fan.
All I could think was, get away, get away, get away.
Don't get shot, don't get shot. And then I got home and I wasn't shot.
Yeah, which is why people probably think they're being tricked when they're interviewed. But it's not a trick. It's that literally you're like, talk to me like I'm a baby, and then I'm trying to get your job.
It's like you want to have that like Vonnegut-y attitude almost of like, explain this thing that is basic to you as if I'm a space alien.
Yeah.
Like, walk me through what a gun is from the perspective of like, so if I'm just watching this thing and I've never seen it before. Like, that's what you want from people is the alien's eye view of their life. Yeah.
Oh, man. Just delighted when Vonnegut comes up. It's great.
Harmon.
Mm-hmm.
Vonnegut.
Yeah, he's doing fucking Sirens of Titan.
I don't know if I told you, I co-host a podcast about Kurt Vonnegut. It's entirely about Kurt Vonnegut. And we knew about that a little in advance of the general public, and it was very hard to not tell anyone. That is so thrilling that if people haven't heard Dan Harmon's adapting The Sirens of Titan, which is a Vonnegut novel for television, and it's like,
who else could possibly do that job?
Right. It's if it was up to me, it would be him. Like, it's great.
Yeah.
But also, because we talked a bit about the process of like people either not realizing they'd be great interview subjects, or they know and they need someone to talk to. Like, if someone wants to be in a personal experience article or in a future Cracked Gets Personal season 2 or, you know, something, what can they do to do that?
They can send us an email at tips@cracked.com.
Let's try and make this like really good, folks. Like, I want to let you know that we want your best stuff. So
high bar here.
So I don't want you to think like, well, I do eat toilet tissue. Like, that's a different network, and that's that's something different.
But that's called Pika, and we just ran an article on Pika.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. 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 Because it's dirt is pica.
It's a lot of different things. Dirt is actually in like Georgia. They sell dirt in some of the stores, like a specific type of Georgia dirt that's like white and supposed to be extra tasty. But it's like a common thing, like chewing dirt in parts of the country still.
But it's not my so-called obsession. That's the only thing that I wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
No,
it's not the A and E. I just can't stop eating toilet tissue. I got to eat it. I got to eat it. Those people. God bless them. But some of them are just trying to get TV time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What do? I eat hard drives. And then you see a shot of them eating a hard drive. And they're like, this is hurting my mouth. Like, well, you're the one who wanted us to come back. So,
am I on TV yet?
Right.
Am I famous yet? It's like that guy who's going to eat a whole plane. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Like, that's impressive. You should get a camera on you. But right. Please
seek
help. A guy's
going to eat a plane?
Yeah, that happened, I think. I think a guy ate a whole plane. Like, over time.
Man.
It was over, like, a chunk of, like, he had, like, a year or two or something like that. It was a while. Oh, it was 10?
Wow.
Brett knows a lot about this.
Yep.
Like, if you're doing the TV show about that guy, of course you film him, because he's eating a plane, and that's newsworthy.
I guess, yeah.
But you also, like, you gotta talk to someone. You can't be in a good place if you're eating a whole plane.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like...
And you can't go to a new place, no plane. It's gone.
Nicely done.
You ate it.
Nicely done.
It was well bookended.
Yeah.
Circle.
Folks, that's the episode for this week. My thanks to Robert Evans and Brandon Johnson for taking the time and for confirming that I didn't dream the experience of spending an entire afternoon in a bowling museum. Really did. And speaking of bizarre ramblings through St. Louis, let's dive right into footnotes. So Brett tracked down the museum in St. Louis that Robert probably broke into based on that story. It's called the City Museum, and their website's awesome. Like, if you're not close to St. Louis, you can pretty much visit it over the internet. So check that out. We're also linking off to a lot of personal experience articles. So if you're unfamiliar with that format, get familiar. Robert and his team make real life funny while never stooping to mock it, which I think is important. It is a Studs Terkel level accomplishment, and you can read hundreds of articles of it for free on cracked.com. That's pretty cool. And most excitingly, there is a link to Cracked Gets Personal on Apple Podcasts. You can also find the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're using that one for the link. Either way, subscribe now to make sure you get all 10 episodes of Cracked Gets Personal Season 1 as they happen through digital magic. If you do that, I thank you. Also, thank you to everybody who came out to our live podcast this past weekend at UCB Sunset in LA. Heck of a lot of video game-based fun, and we're excited for you to hear that in the coming weeks. And next month, September 9th, is a special day. Circle it on a physical calendar. Please, use a marker. We're doing live podcasts from Cracked in Los Angeles and in New York on one day, bi-coastal podcast domination. We're basically conquering the country, and I'm very excited to share the details. So September 9th, 11:30 a.m. at the Javits Center in Manhattan, we're doing a live Cracked podcast at the Now Hear This Festival. I talked about it earlier in the show. I'm talking about it on every show because I'm very excited about it. And I'm pleased to announce our panel right now. You're going to see Michael Swaim. You're going to see Brett Rader. And you're going to see our all-star Murderers Row comedian lineup of Nagin Farsad from Earwolf's show Fake the Nation, Carolina Hidalgo from Cave Comedy Radio, and Claudia Kogan from Last Comic Standing. And yes, you will also see Alex Schmidt from... it says here he is a Shakey's Pizza Parlor Eating Challenge Almost Completer. Why did we book him? Okay, well, other than that other guy, we've got Swaim and Brett and our favorite New York comedians all on one live episode. Come see them. Come meet them at the Now Hear This Festival. Tickets are available at nowhearthisfest.com. Meanwhile, that same day, September 9th, at 7 p.m. Pacific time, Tom Ryman and Abe Epperson are at UCB Sunset in L.A. doing a live episode of Cracked Movie Club. Yeah, our other new podcast, doing their first ever live episode. Listen to Cracked Movie Club in the next few weeks for full details on that. And you can go to UCB Sunset's website for tickets. UCB tends to post that link a few weeks in advance, so if you don't see it yet, it should be there soon. And again, Cracked Podcast live in New York, Cracked Movie Club live in LA on one day only, September 9th. So, new show in your feed, tons of live episodes in your world, and that's just our podcasting news that I'm able to tell you. There's even more coming in the next couple of months, so please stay tuned. And as far as this episode goes, our theme music is Chicago Falcon by the one and only Budos Band. Find them on Brooklyn's own Daptone Records. Today's episode was engineered and co-produced and live fact-checked. That's pretty cool. By Brett Rader. Find Brett at Brett, R-A-D-E-R on Twitter. And if you love this episode, hey, that's great. If you hated it, let me know about it on social media. That's right, social media. The platform that's just about the furthest possible thing from a personal experience. But it's great. Find me on Twitter under the name at Alex Schmitty. Find me on this wider internet at my website, alexschmitty.com. And find the world premiere of our new show, Cracked Gets Personal, in its feed. Please subscribe to that feed. Your ears will thank you. And here's something else for your ears. We'll be back next week with more of the Cracked podcast. How about that? Talk to you then.
Oh, hey, everybody. I'm Dave Holmes.
And I'm Matt McConkie, the sidekick that Dave Holmes never wanted.
You're not a sidekick. You are a full co-host.
Oh, please. I should be so lucky to have
Come
that title.
On. We are on an equal footing here. And homophilia.
Homophilia.
It's all about us, mm-hmm. me and Matt, mm-hmm. talking to a wide variety of LGBTQI plus exclamation point individuals about mm-hmm. their lives, about their pop culture diets,
mm-hmm.
what they're watching on TV, what they're loving, and
who they're loving.
Who
so
they're loving.
We're going to take a deep dive into their personal lives, mm-hmm. ask some very intrusive questions,
yep.
you know, about what their current dating status is, how did they come out, what was their biggest heartbreak, what's going on in their Grindr account, can we see their Grindr account?
Can we improve their Grindr account?
Oh, yeah.
We'll be releasing new episodes every Friday.
Homophilia is coming to you beginning Friday, August 11th, right here on Earwolf.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.